the bottom line in business. Voice America Business.
Welcome to Insight on Coaching with host Tom Floyd. In the next hour, Tom and his co-host explore the many facets, flavors, and sides of the emerging professional coaching field. So get ready for this insightful conversation. Here's your host, Tom Floyd.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Insight on Coaching. Insight on Coaching explores the many facets, flavors, and sides of the emerging professional coaching field. I'm Tom Floyd. I'm the CEO of Insight Educational Consulting and your host for today's show. Well, this week our topic is coaching lessons from The Apprentice. We'll speak with former contestants on The Apprentice about their experiences on this hit reality TV show. And we'll also chat with experts who have summarized overall business, leadership, and coaching lessons that have been gleaned from the show and applied to the business community. Well, we have a fantastic panel of experts and coaches as well as former contestants from The Apprentice on our show today. Our guests including Duncan Brody, Lauren Franzoni, Elizabeth Jarose, Troy McLean, and Ann Venino. And I'll begin today by telling you a little bit more about each of them. I'll start with Duncan first. Duncan Brody is Managing Director of Goals and Achievements Limited, a leadership development company that works with individuals, teams, and organizations to develop their management and leadership capability. Duncan is also a chartered management accountant, a certified professional coach, and team coach facilitator. Prior to starting his own business, he spent over 25 years in accountancy managing and leading teams in a range of major organizations, including PricewaterhouseCoopers, Ernst & Young, Lloyd's TSB, and the National Health Service in the UK. Welcome to the show, Duncan.
Thank you. Thanks for inviting me.
Our next guest, Lauren Franzoni, is Vice President and Executive Editor at ExecuNet, a recognized authority in executive career development, recruitment, and retention trends. In this capacity, she leads the firm's research initiatives, website and publication content, membership, and customer acquisition, its executive career management resources, and communities of interest and networking services. Lauren joined ExecuNet in 2004, bringing extensive experience in the specialized information industry, including content development and community building for electronic internet communications and print media for corporations and nonprofit organizations. Welcome to the show, Lauren.
Thank you, Tom. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's a pleasure to have you. Our third guest, Elizabeth Jarose, beat more than 1 million applicants to be on NBC's second season of The Apprentice, where every week 17 million watched her compete for the coveted position with Donald Trump. In addition to being a charismatic speaker, Elizabeth is the founder and president of Pulse 40 Incorporated, an innovative market research consulting firm that advises top Fortune 500 companies such as Kraft, Intel, AT&T, Clorox, Blockbuster, Coca-Cola, and Saatchi Advertising on market research, branding, and positioning strategy. Elizabeth's accomplishments have been featured all over the media, including The Today Show, Fox News Live, Inside Edition, Regis and Kelly, The Big Idea with Donnie Deutsch, and magazines including Business Week, People, Fast Company, and Fortune. Welcome to the show, Elizabeth.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Our next guest, Troy McLean, was a cast member on the first season of The Apprentice with Donald Trump and is also an award-winning international speaker, professional business coach, and award-winning television host. He is also founder and president of the McLean Company, a diverse and unique corporation providing coaching, personal branding, and speaker services. Troy has appeared on CNN, Larry King Live, Dateline NBC, Live with Regis and Kelly, and E! Entertainment. He was also the host of Miss World 2004, host of the reality program Home Team, and has appeared in the miniseries The 100 Greatest TV Quotes and Catchphrases. Welcome to the show, Troy.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
And last but not least, our last guest, Ann Venino, is the owner of Moving Forward Coaching and Consulting and is also a business coach, author, and consultant based in Los Angeles, California. Her book, Leadership on Trial, Lessons from The Apprentice, offers 7 leadership lessons from the first season of The Apprentice. Since 2000, Ann has also written a local weekly newspaper column, Coaching Corner, which guides readers to a fulfilling life, and has also published 2 e-books, Power Stories and Coaching Corner Volume 1. Additionally, she writes the leadership blog and a bi-monthly e-zine, Power at Work. Welcome back to the show, Ann.
Thank you.
Well, as most of our listeners know, Donald Trump first introduced The Apprentice in 2004. And the original show has spawned successive seasons, international and celebrity versions, books, studies, and certainly a large base of loyal fans since its inception. And I'd like to begin, kind of as we do at the beginning of all of our shows, by quickly sharing some information that our research team pulled together about the show before we jump into our conversation today. First point, The Apprentice is a television franchise that originated in 2004 in the United States on NBC. Billed as the ultimate job interview, the show depicted a group of 15 to 18 businessmen and women competing in an elimination-style competition for a one-year, $250,000 job of running one of host and executive producer Donald Trump's companies. Since its premiere, the show has spawned many licensed international versions, as well as several imitations. Now, many magazines, newspapers, educational institutions, and organizations like the American Management Association have also captured lessons learned from this hit reality show over the past several years. For example, a headline from an article in the April 15, 2004 issue of the Boston Globe reads, "Business schools nationwide find some real lessons in reality TV hit." The article continues by highlighting the following. According to the article, there's an entire management class at the University of Washington in Seattle that is devoted to the show, complete with an hour-long question and answer session with one of Trump's assistants. At Georgetown University, the accounting and finance faculty, who usually turn up their noses at other reality shows like Survivor, are eagerly rehashing Apprentice episodes in the hallways and even formed a pool to guess the winner. At business schools across the country these days, Donald Trump's The Apprentice is all the rage, working its way into classroom discussions on everything from what's fair play in negotiations to how to win customers, or even on how the Donald should style his hair. At the University of Washington, about 80 undergraduates in the management lessons from The Apprentice class watch the show every week and come up with their own business plans for the tasks presented on television. Their final exam, a journal of real-life lessons that they learned from Trump. And last but not least, one last data point, this from an ABC News blog called The Working Wounded Blog, which is maintained by Cindy Sheehan. According to her blog, a small percentage of people, 4.8% actually, cited The Apprentice as their main source for information about how to survive the workplace. Well, Troy, I'd like to start with you to kick off the show today. My first question, just a big picture question, can you tell us a little bit about your experience on The Apprentice? What was it like being on the show?
Oh, sure. Well, first of all, it was an absolute amazing experience, and I'd have to back you up from the beginning to tell you how I got on the show, and my life legitimately was 10 miles to the left and 10 miles to the right, and I'd spent most of my time mending fences or skinning my fist on something other than a contract, and here I am, a local guy with a little bit of exposure in my local community and running a small business, and my wife had sent in the application. On the very first season of The Apprentice, there was over 215,000 people that had applied. There was 11,000 face-to-face interviews, and then I got down to, I think, 250 of us, and then down to 50. And I was the first person to go on the show with only a high school diploma to tout underneath his record. And so I was going up against 15 contestants with some sort of a college degree, anywhere from a BA to a PhD. And when I went on the show, for me, it was, again, life was 10 miles to the left and 10 miles to the right. Next thing I know, I'm here in New York City and just staring at all these big concrete walls. And the journey was incredible. But I say that because that's what I decided to make it. And I know a lot of other people have different opinions on their experience. But for me, just to have the opportunity to interact and work within those type of scenes and in those type of scenarios was something that was breathtaking and something that really helped hone in my skills later on in life.
So it sounds like overall, in terms of the experience you had, it was definitely a positive experience, if not a very motivational experience, too.
Oh, yeah. For me, it was definitely a positive experience. There were certainly, here's what I tell everybody, it's kind of like bungee jumping or skydiving. At the time, you're asking yourself, why in goodness gracious am I doing this? But looking back on it, you go, whoo, that was a hell of an experience.
And did you ever think that the show would become so big that organizations like the American Management Association and universities like the University of Washington would be pulling business lessons learned from it?
No. I mean, we had no clue that The Apprentice was going to be what The Apprentice was. And we were even told in the beginning that they didn't even know if it was going to get picked up as a series. And then we taped from September of 2003 to November of 2003. And by January of 2004, they were averaging 28 million Americans watching the show. And the show had introduced us to a whole new world. I mean, we had fans who were not just regular fans, but fans of high net worth, such as Warren Buffett. Warren Buffett sent a private jet, picked me up in Boise, Idaho, flew me to Omaha, Nebraska, and I got to hang out with the guy, you know, for a day. I mean, Bill Gates. We met Bill William Gates. Mark Cuban, you know, showed up and contacted us, and it introduced us. It certainly didn't define me, but it definitely gave me a platform to talk about my particular style in life and my particular style in business, and it certainly was a great education. And I end with this. I did not go to college, but that doesn't mean that I didn't get educated, and I tell a lot of people. Some people paid tuition to get their education. I paid attention. And I just paid attention to some of the great coaches that are out there, some of the great business leaders that are out there. And I learned to get my education through paying attention.
And one last question for you real fast. If you had to summarize what your personal biggest lesson learned from being on the show was, what would you say that that is?
I say the biggest lesson that I learned from being on the show is that it's not the amount of money that you claim on your tax returns that make you great. It's the work experience and life experience that makes you great. And I have learned tons of lessons from Gates, from Buffett, from Trump, even from Cuban. But I realize that I've also learned those lessons from people less obvious that have been in front of me my whole entire life. They just don't have the tax returns to say that they're that great.
Well, it certainly sounds like a great lesson to me. Elizabeth, I'd like to turn to you next. You were a contestant on season 2 of The Apprentice. What was your personal biggest lesson learned from being on the show yourself?
Well, you know, first I just want to say that, you know, Troy's season, I was on season 2, so Troy's season really, really catapulted our season as well. So I just sort of want to honor you, Troy, and all of the stuff that you guys did, because it really made a fantastic experience for us as well. We ended up having 1 million apply for season 2, and then, you know, they chose 18. So it was just, for me, an honor to even be chosen to get onto the show at that point. And I think my biggest lesson, to answer your question, Tom, is really that, you know, what I do inside, how, you know, my workplace within is really what determines my experience and my reality. So, you know, it's kind of like Troy said, you know, it was a little bit like bungee jumping or flying off, you know, skydiving. You know, you really, you know, at the time you're going through this experience and you are kind of thinking, gosh, what am I doing? What am I doing? And in that moment for me, I started to question myself a little bit. I started to question lots of things. And I think the key lesson I walked away from is that I can still stay centered within myself in those kinds of moments. And it's really made me stronger as I've gone about my business in the real world after the fact, because now I don't waver much. You know, I know that I create my reality, and it's all kind of inside of me.
So it sounds like you brought up several great points that were actually captured in Anne's book, for example, when we talk about that. It sounds like the biggest lesson learned there was really staying true to yourself and who you are.
Very much so, very much so. And I think I did that to a great degree on the show. I mean, I grew up in Michigan. I'm from the Midwest. Authenticity has always been just a very, very important thing for me. I didn't do anything on the show that I wasn't proud of or, you know, anything like that. But just the internal journey that I went on while I was on the show, I just remember I questioned myself a little bit, and I looked back on that and really learned from that.
Well, same question that I had for Troy, too. When you were on the show, did you ever think that business schools and organizations like the AMA would be pulling lessons learned from the program, too?
You know, I did not. Even though we had a lot of acclaim because of season 1, at that point, we didn't know that business schools were doing lessons learned or, you know, even that the water cooler chat in the office was about The Apprentice. And when I found that out, I was really, really honored. And I did speak at the American Management Association, and just to see the lessons that they were teaching from the show, it made me feel like I was a part of something that, you know, was positively influencing society in some way at that point.
And has the show changed your view at all on things like leadership and teamwork and the other skills that we typically hear about that are needed to be successful in the workplace today?
You know, the thing that that I found interesting about The Apprentice and teamwork is that it's not like a typical team that you would put together where, as a leader, you can create the same end goal and the same reward. At the end of the day in The Apprentice, you know, we're competing for one position. So even if we, as a team, were on the same page in terms of wanting to win a particular task, many people on the team were also not really on the same page in terms of wanting, for example, me to win or, you know, anyone other than themselves to win. So in an environment like that, I really learned how to rally people around something, even when seemingly at the end you didn't have similar objectives. So to choose kind of a third point of reference that everybody could really get wrapped around and go for.
Boy, I concur
with
that.
And that's an incredible skill.
I concur with that, absolutely, Elizabeth. That's correct. That was a very challenging time to try to figure out how are you going to get the team to win when individuals within the team want you out.
Right.
And so I think to complement what you said is you find a cause or a mission that's bigger than yourself, and you get them to rally around that opportunity. And I saw the same thing.
Yep, and that is just a huge skill that I've taken with me in life. It was very great to get that. That's why I got fired. The team kind of staged a little coup and decided not to do what I was hoping to do for the task. And I ultimately got fired because Trump said that I couldn't, that I didn't lead the team. And so I really looked at that lesson, and it was beautiful. It's a beautiful lesson to get.
Well, and just some of the things that you both had to rally people around. I mean, they were tasks that the average person out there, you know, would have been too overwhelmed, I think I would say, to even try to tackle. And then, you know, it's like what you said, they're not on the same page. And in some cases, you've got some pretty difficult personalities to get rallied around, you know, some of those things too.
Yeah, and here was the challenge that I think a lot of people don't realize. In business or in life, you have a sales cycle or a life cycle of whatever comes to play. And let's just pick a widget. And when you originate that widget and you ultimately sell that widget, usually you have an average sales cycle of about 30 days. And along those 30 days, you have bumps in the road that are just little blips in the road. And that's, you were supposed to call someone back on a Friday, but you don't get back to them until Monday. That's, you were supposed to deliver the product on a Monday, but you didn't get it delivered until Tuesday. What the genius of Trump and The Apprentice was, is they took those sales cycles and they grabbed onto either end of that sales cycle from the beginning to the end, and they put their hands around it and they crushed it together. And they crushed it together and they gave you 48 hours to accomplish the same thing that takes 30 days. So now those little bumps in the road become catastrophic errors. So if you fail to call somebody back on a Friday, it's too late. You don't have until Monday. It's over. If you fail to deliver the product on a Monday and you're supposed to deliver on a Tuesday, it's over. So these little bumps in the road become grave errors on The Apprentice, and it really taught us to look beyond the obvious of things and really taught us to get involved in something that's bigger. And we had to take on a challenge that said, okay, today you're going to be my friend, but tomorrow you're going to be my respected adversary, and you learn to work with your adversary quite well to get through to the next task.
Excellent. Well, Anne, I'd like to turn to you next. Now, later in the show, we're going to focus on some of the specific lessons within your book, Leadership on Trial, Lessons from The Apprentice. But for now, just a big picture question, can you tell us a little bit more about what led you to write a book about lessons learned from the show?
Sure, I'd be happy to. It was, the first point was that what led me to see the show, because with my schedule and everything, there wasn't time to get involved in reality TV, but I read an article the week before the show premiered in the New York Times that said that the show was about power at work. And I work with my clients on maximizing their performance and finding fulfillment at work, so I decided to take a look, and I became a huge fan and didn't miss an episode. And the way that I used it was both for my own observation of how people worked within the workplace, and also looking at Donald Trump and how he managed and the standards that he set up. And I was actually writing another book about power in the workplace. And we were driving up to Northern California, my husband and I, and he said, we were talking about The Apprentice, and he said, why don't you write a book about The Apprentice? And I said, no way, I've got plenty to do. And I started thinking about it, and I went up to a brunch where a lot of people who had graduated from top schools and MBA programs were there, and I said, you know, my husband thinks I should write a book, and they were all fans of the first season of The Apprentice. So I quickly wrote an outline, and that was that, and it was great to write the book, and I learned a lot in the writing of it as well as from the show.
Well, and it's funny how in life you never quite know when that inspiration is going to hit you. I'm sure you didn't think that afternoon car ride with your husband in California would suddenly inspire you to write a book. So funny how that happens, right?
It sure is. And it was inspired, and the main thing is to be open to it. I'm sure everybody on the call can tell about times that if you're open and receptive and don't block things off, it leads you on a wonderful ride, and this book has been one for me.
And from your perspective, do you believe that the challenges that the contestants faced across the various seasons were typical of those that business professionals face in the workplace today?
They were typical in the sense that they had some of the elements, but I think they weren't typical in what Troy was talking about in the intense time crunch and what Elizabeth was talking about, that everybody was competing for one position, but they had to be a team in order to succeed. So I think some of it was intense, and you were on a much bigger stage besides the fact that you were on national television with millions of people watching you. But I think it was, the lessons were clearly there. And one way that I used the show was when I was working with people that were trying to understand the workplace better and know the game of work, I'd say, take a look at The Apprentice and let me know what you find out. And that led me to put a series of forms where you could look at The Apprentice as a case study in the back of my book, because that's why the American Management Association and the University of Washington are looking at that, because you can take a case study, follow a candidate all the way through. What did they do right? What did they do wrong? You can follow a team. You can pretend that you're Donald and say, how would you have judged the performance in the boardroom?
Interesting. Lauren, I'd like to loop you in on the conversation next. What kind of impact do you feel The Apprentice has had on corporate America and the business world?
Well, one of the things we see from the executives in our network is that the fascination with The Apprentice has a lot to do with, in fact, how it does reflect so many of the way days do play out for them. So while it definitely was a compressed time period, and there were certainly lessons learned from that, but I think what you saw in so many of the participants was their reactions to stress in the workplace. And so if there was a stressful work situation, you know, an interview, for example, is one of the most stressful things that a leader will go through when trying to, you know, achieve a new position, whether it's inside a company or in a new company. And this very visible interview process, if you will, and the fact that everything about your performance is seen by such a wide audience of people really reminds us a bit about how we react under stress to certain situations. And I think that if you think through any of the Apprentice seasons that you've watched, and you think about who you might say were, there's always a winner, but there's certainly more than one winner per program or per season. There are a number of people who sort of stand out, and the people who really stand out in their performance are the people who had focus, who had flexibility, who could listen and learn from the whatever environment they were thrown into. So for however long they made it through the season, they had very consistent values showing, and they typically were very positive and had, you know, creative and enthusiastic approaches, and that's what companies are looking for when they're interviewing potential executives. They're looking for that kind of show, but, you know, that's why they'll go through, you know, 9 people interviews, 2 days, 3 panels, all that sort of thing, to see how they're going to perform. And then we also had this you know, fishbowl effect of everyone watching. And this was one of the first times, I think, that individuals who had been, you know, entrepreneurs, successful business people in their own right, suddenly they weren't just known in their local communities, but they were known across the country, across the world. And this was, I think, a preview of what we're now seeing in the way that companies are are doing, you know, major online searches about candidates before they bring them into to an interview process. That everything that many of the everyday business persons' activities and what they're known for may be now very accessible on the internet, and they could be either qualified or disqualified even from getting into the discussion based on what's out there. And for these folks like Troy and Elizabeth, they've had this tremendous, you know, microscope put on them, and they were amongst the first out there, and now this is becoming quite commonplace. So as executives and business people are looking at their careers, they have to think, you know, not only, you know, who do they know and who knows them, but who knows what about them and who knows what they can do.
And I'd like to add to that, Lauren, that is absolutely correct. One of the things that most people don't realize is we were all interviewing for a job that we didn't know what the job was. And I point that out to a lot of people. I go, when you apply for a job and the job is advertising a sales position, well, you cater your resume, you cater your character and your behavior towards your sales attributes. But if it's a management job, you cater your resume more towards management. And we were asked to apply for a job, but yet they wouldn't tell us what the job was. The job description was left blank, and it was just told the job would be for this amount of money, and it will be for this person. But we will not tell you what the job entails, and we just want to watch your behavior, your character. And then to add what you also said, Lauren, that there was a lot of winners out there that didn't win the show. And I tell everybody that winning is for losers sometimes. I lost the coveted position, but I won so much more because I won exposure via the bandwidth of not only TV, but the internet. And we literally took our life from 10 miles to the left to 10 miles to the right. Next thing I know, it was Australia to Alaska. And we had firms calling us up from Australia. We had firms calling us up from China, from Australia. And the bandwidth of that internet is something that I compliment on what you're saying. Is amazing, and more people are just looking at your online performance or your documented information that you have out there via the internet or via the bandwidth of TV. And I think that really opened my eyes as well. A guy who thought that the laptop where you put your DVD player at, I thought that was a coffee holder. So I'm impressed with the internet access and stuff.
Well,
Troy,
yeah, this is
Elizabeth.
You mentioned
I'm
that
still
too.
Getting just requests. From, I think the last one was Africa. I think they must be airing The Apprentice in Africa or something at this point. And so it's really quite the reach in terms of lessons learned. It's not just in the States. It's been really all over the world.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
so
it's interesting,
it sounds
too,
like
I think,
just
to watch
recap in terms of some of the impact that it's had. It's one, the show has definitely put a focus on some of the things that companies and organizations within corporate America look for in successful people they would bring into their organizations. So, Lauren, you mentioned flexibility, for example, and the ability to learn and focus and things like that, that it really helped people see what some of those traits are. And then in terms of just hiring people and really making sure that you are selecting the right candidate for a job, it really magnified, you know, to do your research and the importance of carefully looking at what the person has done in the past. You mentioned online search, for example, and things like that. So it sounds like those are some of the points that the show really brought to fruition. One last question before we go to our first commercial break, and Duncan, I'd like to turn to you for that. I understand that you've spent some time kind of capturing the differences and similarities between both The Apprentice in the U.S. as well as The Apprentice that ran in the U.K. What have been some of your observations in doing so, or just kind of anything in general that you would add to the conversation so far?
Yeah, well, I think many great points have been made. A couple of things. We've just had season 4 of The Apprentice in the UK, and I've just chosen a brand new apprentice. It's a gentleman called Sir Alan Sugar, who is best known for involvement in the technology business. But I think a couple of points that were made earlier on about listening to different people's views around contributions is really important. We had one candidate on the series here who maybe was slightly zany, I think was how Sir Alan described the person, but she actually had a very sharp business brain. And I think we also saw that in The Apprentice, while it's obviously very pressurized in terms of a lot to do in a lot of time, sometimes you just need to stand back and do a common sense check on what you're doing. And a great example in the UK was on the very first task of this season, where candidates had to sell boxes of fish. And one of the teams, in the haste to start selling, priced a whole lobster at the per kilogram price. So, of course, they were making lots of sales, but they were selling lobsters for about $8 when they probably should have been selling them about $46.
Oh.
So I think sometimes you've just got to stand back, you know, in that frenzy. Business is demanding, and business does sometimes require you to think on your feet very quickly. And I think sometimes that ability to stand back and just say, hey, does this make sense, is a really good quality.
That's a great point. Well, I'm starting to hear the music for our first commercial break, so let's go ahead and go on pause. Stay tuned, everyone. More from Inside on Coaching when we return.
The bottom line in business. Voice America Business.
Insight Educational Consulting, IEC, is a management consulting firm located in San Jose, California. Our mission is to provide customized professional development services that enable our clients to achieve their business objectives while providing an environment that embraces learning, collaboration, and change. Using organizational development, change management, performance management, and instructional design methodologies, IEC consultants partner with customers to develop customized solutions that improve individual and organizational performance, as well as managing the change brought about by large initiatives. Our services include learning and development training consulting, human performance consulting, change management consulting, and professional coaching services. To learn more, please visit our website at www.ieconsulting.biz or contact our host at tfloyd@ieconsulting.biz.
Marissa, are you ready yet? I know you can hear me. You are not missing school again. Marissa! You trying to be a nobody or something? Let's go! All right then. Hit it. I know you can hear this. Hey guys, move closer. That's it. Girl, I am not leaving.
Hey, whatever it takes, don't let your friends drop out. A real friend can make all the difference.
Cut that noise, yo! I'm coming! Took you long enough. Thanks for the help, guys.
For more ways to help, go to OperationGraduation.com. A public service message from the U.S. Army and the Ad Council.
The bottom line in business. Voice America Business.
Welcome back to Inside on Coaching. If you have a question or comment, dial toll-free 866-472-5790. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Inside on Coaching. I'm Tom Floyd. And for those of you just joining us today, the topic is Coaching Lessons from The Apprentice. With me are Duncan Brody, Managing Director of Goals and Achievements Limited, Lauren Franzoni, Vice President and Executive Editor of ExecuNet Center for Executive Careers, Elizabeth Giroux, former contestant from The Apprentice Season 2 and founder and president of Pulse 40 Incorporated, Troy McLean, former contestant on The Apprentice Season 1 and founder and president of The McLean Company, and Ann Bonino, executive coach and author of Leadership on Trial, Lessons from The Apprentice. Well, in this segment of the show, I'd like to begin our discussion around some of the lessons learned from The Apprentice, particularly some of the overall business lessons. And let me quickly share some more data that our research team pulled together to set the stage. According to a Business Week article titled Lessons B-Schoolers Can Learn from The Apprentice, which appeared in its February 2nd, 2004 issue, writer Jennifer Merritt notes, the show features some hard lessons you aren't likely to learn in typical case studies on leadership. Two lessons that she summarized in that article included, lesson one, always watch your back.
For all the enlightened talk of teamwork, when push comes to shove, people often look out for themselves and try to blame others for their failures. Lesson 2, there's no such thing as bad publicity. Quality isn't what drives customers to buy. Exposure is what matters in a celebrity-obsessed society. Call it the Donald Trump version of Marketing 101. In another article, this from Workforce Management, writer John Holland identifies key lessons from the Donald, as he put it, saying that there are lessons to be learned from The Apprentice and they can be applied to any business and workforce anywhere. Three lessons that he summarized included lesson 1, leadership, even a little bit of it, matters. Although it is largely an individual competition, it's not surprising that the winners of The Apprentice were the people who showed some basic team leadership skills, at least at a very minor level. Second lesson he summarized, second guessing is fatally disruptive. He continues by saying, The Apprentice is a show where the second guessing goes nonstop. Competitors constantly second guess one another's motives, appearance, work habits, leadership skills, and everything else. And Trump is the worst, using the weekly boardroom appearance by the losing team as an opportunity to second-guess everything before he summarily fires someone. A third lesson that he also summarized in the article, it's good to be a selfless team player, even if Trump doesn't think so. Each week on The Apprentice, two of the competitors are designated as project managers for that week's tasks, and the manager of the winning team gets a small bonus. They can't be fired if their team loses the next week. Getting people to put the larger team above their own personal self-interest is one of the real keys to success for most any business and not a reason to fire someone. Finally, one last point real fast, this from the New York Times. As quoted in the New York Times, the show's firing ritual is somehow more plausible than voting people off islands. It reflects the musical chair's quality of corporate life. Top management keeps taking away seats so that only people no one would ever want to work with are left. Well, Duncan, I'd like to start with you for this segment, and I'd like to begin with the New York Times quote first. Do you believe that The Apprentice reflects what it refers to as the musical chair quality of corporate life, so to speak?
Yeah, I mean, I think that you have a period of time to prove your worth, particularly in senior levels in any organization, and whether The Apprentice fully reflects it, I would say is questionable because, as both Troy and Elizabeth have mentioned, it is incredibly incredibly short period of time. But I do think that there is definitely a drive in businesses for getting results and getting results quickly. Sometimes at the cost of that is that success is achieved in the short term, but sustainable success is not achieved.
Lauren, anything that you would add?
Well, I think Duncan's got a point because companies are frequently assessing the leadership potential of the professionals in the organization, and they have high performers, the hypos as they call them, and that does that mean the others are all low performers or just not quite as high? There's a big question as to whether one should even structure it that way. One of the things The Apprentice reminded me of was how many business school grads, and also is common in large nonprofit organizations in their sort of fellows programs, where they bring individuals in, and every it's through some period of time, whether it be a year or 2 years, they rotate them through a variety of departments or perhaps businesses within the organization. And much as Troy said before the break, where you suddenly find yourself performing and interviewing and you don't know what your end goal is, it's a very difficult position to put people in. And so they are really, have no foundation beyond who they are, what they can bring to the table, and how quickly they can sort of suss out the situation. I spoke to a professional just the other day who said that, her experience moving through one of these year-long programs was that every time she went to a new department, it was as though she'd left one team and gone to the other. And you think about how Trump used to reformulate the teams where suddenly, you'd been, it was all for the you're one team, and then suddenly you have to switch allegiances and join the other team and compete just as hard and bring your specific goals to the organization, and I think it's very much a sense of you need to know what's driving you and begin in any situation to always look for, you know, what am I passionate about and what is it that I can bring to this situation to try to create success, because it may not always be in control of the situation.
So it really is a sink or swim situation, and in those situations, it highlighted that really stick to your goals, your passions, and kind of what's driving you to get through it.
Exactly.
Okay. Well, Elizabeth, question for you. The first lesson that was captured in the Business Week article that I referenced was always watch your back, and it talked about the contestants blaming each other and only looking out for themselves and things like that. Can you tell us about your experience around that? Was that a recurring theme or something that you consistently saw while you were on the show?
Well, the answer to that is yes. Was I mentioned in that article?
You were.
It was an article so very similar that that used me as a couple of examples of what they thought to be victim of some of those things. I mean, just because of the way I was fired, as I mentioned earlier, you know, the team kind of, basically what happened, for those of you listening who don't remember, is we were doing an NYPD marketing task, and marketing is my specialty. That's what I do for many corporations. And I felt very strongly that we should do a positive campaign message, and we ended up doing a very negative one, mostly because the team decided that that's what they wanted to do and just kind of rallied together and didn't want to listen. So I found out later, it was actually through the interview process, before I went to the boardroom to get fired, I found out that they had decided to do that as a team, like almost stage a coup. One of the teammates of mine came to me and told me that. So, you know, that would be a watch-your-back scenario in my mind, you know. And prior to that, I had done pretty well, And I think they were kind of gunning for people that they thought they could get off the show. And whenever you're a project leader on that show, you're a target. So if everybody can come into the boardroom and say, you know, we think it's this, we think it's this, and everybody's the same, it makes it pretty easy for Trump to kind of make a decision. And that's what happened to me. And that's kind of why I was bringing up earlier, you know, the idea of, you know, how do you lead a team when you have competing objectives, and you know, the point of going for something greater than just yourself or your, you know, your own interests.
And let's talk about the same situation that Elizabeth just highlighted, or same type of situation in the workplace. So if we're coming at it from a coaching perspective, for example, let's say, you know, you've got a coach out there who's coaching a manager who has a team full of people who are finger-pointing and placing blame on each other, or even, you know, in this case, forming a coup, perhaps. How would you guide a manager in dealing with that situation? And are there any relevant points that you would pull from the show about that?
I think one of the surprises in writing the book, a lot of the lessons were things that I might have guessed before were going to be lessons, but the one that really surprised me as I was writing was to be a true leader, you have to know when to join and when to lead, and everybody's been talking about that in the show today, and there was one point where one of the contestants, Tammy, in the first season, said she knew that they were duped on a particular job. And Trump really went at her, and he said, you know, you were part of the team. That wasn't a place where you needed to pull away from the team and distinguish yourself. If I were coaching someone and they were either getting a sense that people were going to be moving against that person, or someone told them, as in Elizabeth's case, I think what I would recommend is that we coach on, is this a time for you to lead and really size up the situation and move out on your own, rather than being concerned about being a leader of a team and having to be a real team member. And I think it's a very important point, and I think it's something that you have to address if you're going to move up into the higher ranks of management, to know when you're joining and when you're leading. And The Apprentice is a perfect example of that, because as Elizabeth mentioned, you are competing for one spot, but your success in most of the show is dependent on working well as a team.
I think it's funny, too, because the duped was me duping Katrina. That was the part.
That's right. You're in there.
I want what you want.
Right.
Right after I wrote that and after it aired, I got contacted by every law firm. And I guess that's an actual strategy or technique, that there's some name to it, and I didn't know what it was. I just was what they're referring to is Katrina and I were negotiating over two separate pieces of property. And I knew that I wanted exactly what she wanted, but she didn't want to own up to that. And so
I hate to write on a piece there, of paper. But hearing the music for our next commercial break. Oh, let's go ahead and go on pause. More from Insight on Coaching and lessons learned from The Apprentice when we return.
The bottom line in business. Voice America Business.
Insight Educational Consulting, IEC, is a management consulting firm located in San Jose, California. Our mission is to provide customized professional development services that enable our clients to achieve their business objectives while providing an environment that embraces learning, collaboration, and change. Using organizational development, change management, performance management, and instructional design methodologies, IEC consultants partner with customers to develop customized solutions that improve individual and organizational performance, as well as managing the change brought about by large initiatives. Our services include learning and development training consulting, human performance consulting, change management consulting, and professional coaching services. To learn more, please visit our website at www.ieconsulting.biz or contact our host at tfloyd@ieconsulting.biz.
Do you need directions to solid financial future? If so, the Money Answers Show with Jordan Goodman will provide you with a roadmap to making smart money decisions in every area of your personal finances. Join Jordan every Monday at 12 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, 3 p.m. Eastern, for the Money Answers Show on the Voice America Business Channel. Learn how and where to get the best deals on mortgages, cars, and insurance. Find out the best ways to save for college and retirement. Get out of debt, improve your credit rating, and save on your taxes. The Money Answers Show with Jordan Goodman will provide you with great tips on investment opportunities in real estate, stocks, annuities, and other investment vehicles. That's the Money Answers Show with Jordan Goodman on the Voice America Business Channel every Monday at 12 p.m. Pacific Standard Time.
Are you feeling slammed and suckered in today's stock market? If so, then you need to tune in to Profitable Investing with Jordan Kimmel. Every Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, Jordan Kimmel will train you in what you can do to beat up the big boys on Wall Street, as well as share his secrets to success so that you can buy and sell like a profit-pumping pro. Grab the bull market by the horns and listen to Profitable Investing with Jordan Kimmel. Every Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, right here on the Bottom Line in Business Talk, Voice America Business.
The Bottom Line in Business. Voice America Business.
Welcome back to Insight on Coaching. If you have a question or comment, dial toll-free 866-472-5790. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Insight on Coaching. I'm Tom Floyd. Today the topic is coaching lessons from The Apprentice, and with me are Duncan Brody, Lauren Franzoni, Elizabeth DeRose, Troy McLean, and Ann Bonino. Well, in the last segment of our show, I'd like to talk more about some of the leadership and coaching lessons pulled from the show, as captured in our guest Ann Bonino's book, Leadership on Trial, Lessons from The Apprentice. Some additional information to very quickly set the stage. In Leadership on Trial, Lessons from The Apprentice, professional business coach and one of our guests, Ann Bonino, illustrates seven distinct lessons found in the first season of The Apprentice. Leadership on Trial goes beyond the show itself, giving readers advice on developing leadership skills and providing exercises and resources through which readers can put the lessons into practice. To highlight the following seven leadership lessons from the book, Lesson 1, Take Risks. Lesson 2, Be Yourself. I think that's one we've certainly talked about so far in the show as well. Lesson 3, Know the Game, also has already come up. Lesson 4, Maintain Balance. Lesson 5, Have a Strategy. Lesson 6, Think Outside the Box. And Lesson 7, another great point we talked about, Know When to Join and When to Lead. And just a question to start with you. So many of these lessons called out to me, and it's interesting how many in the natural course of our conversation today have already come out and been discussed. Let's focus on one that we haven't talked about as much yet, and that's Lesson 1, Take Risks. Can you tell us a little bit more about that? When and why is it important for leaders to take risks in the workplace?
I think risk is an absolute part of every workday. It may be in large degrees or small degrees, but I think what it means is that you can't succeed in business without taking them. It means that there will always be unknowns involved in business situations, and you have to get comfortable with the possibility of loss. If you strive for absolute certainty or safety, you're doomed. You're not going to get very far. There's certainly some jobs that you can do, but you have to take risks. And every person that applied for The Apprentice took risks, as Troy was talking about, his reluctance to go on there, but he jumped, and it had wonderful consequences for him. So I think getting used to risk, in our society, we create safety. If you stay in the box, if you go the way that people say, you'll have a fairly safe life. You may not have a very interesting life or even perhaps a fulfilling life, but you have to get used to taking risks. You have to be able at some point to jump off out of your comfort zone into the unknown and take a leap. For several years, I worked in New York City as part of a hazardous materials response team, and that's where I really learned to take risks, because you had to make decisions with limited information, and they had to be made immediately. There was no going back. You had to live with what you decided, go for it, and then move from there.
And, Ann, I agree with that, that the risk, even in talking about my situation, I was not going to apply for the show. And had I not applied for the show, I would not have the bandwidth that I have today. And I think in taking those risks, you even got to look at the fact that your end goal, my end goal was ultimately to win. And if I look at it, I did win simply by making it through the process. I may not have won the coveted position, but I won so much more if I'm willing to open my eyes and look at that. Today we travel, we literally travel the world. Today we speak for Lockheed Martin, the Clinton Foundation, Berkshire Hathaway, and we got introduced to that because of my willingness to take a risk, or actually truly because of my wife's encouragement to make me take a risk.
And from both the story that you shared before the last break and just kind of in general, would you kind of summarize that as saying that those who were successful on the show were those who took more risks than others?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I think the ones that continue to take risks, here's what I will say, that the ones that continue to take risk on the show are the ones that continue to be successful after the show.
Interesting. That makes sense. Elizabeth, anything that you would add to that? Do you think that those who took risks were more successful than others? And follow-up question to that, can you think of a situation where taking risks backfired on anybody on the show too?
Well, I guess to answer the first question, I mean, I think taking risks is critical if you want to live a fulfilling life. I firmly believe that, and it's something that I'm growing more and more into myself. I mean, obviously, I'm a risk taker. I didn't have a problem going up in front of 20 million people and competing for the job, so on some level, I have that going for me. But, you know, everybody, including myself, you know, we think about things. We weigh the options. We do, you know, we want to take calculated risks. I remember terms like cautiously optimistic that came out, even in my season of The Apprentice. And I think the more I look at my own life, the more I realize that when I've actually made the leap, you know, as was said earlier in the call, and risked potentially losing something, those were the times where the big things happened for me, where the big transitions, the big changes, the things that I've always wanted to happen in my life have happened. And it's when I play it safe and I sort of stay in my box that I get more of the same. So I think it's just a critical piece of success and really pushing yourself to limits and transitioning from one state to another. Separately, I just want to mention that Troy and I have had a couple of conversations just in the last week, and he is somebody who is consistently taking risks. And we were talking about a project that I have going, and one of the things that he was saying to me was, Elizabeth, you got to take the leap, you got to take the risk. And so I bring that up because I think having support and having a network around you of people who are of like mind, who think big like you do, or at least surround yourself with people who you know, you want to be more like, is really, really important, because you encourage each other, and that's the kind of support network that's there no matter what happens with the particular project.
So really having that network encourages you, it inspires you, and it kind of makes taking some of those risks a little bit less scary.
Absolutely. And you know, that brings up the whole networking point, which, you know, we don't talk about a lot when we talk about The Apprentice, because much of it happens after the fact and nobody really asks those questions. But, you know, what a powerful group of individuals, you know, hand-selected from across the country. And I have made some incredible friends, and you know, Troy being one of them.
Well, I concur with that too, Elizabeth.
Well, that is certainly a great point as well. I feel like
gosh, there's so many lessons learned from the show. I think we need to have at least another follow-up show or two. But unfortunately, I can't believe it. We're at the end of our show today. A huge thank you to the five of you for joining us today. As always, huge thank you to our listeners as well. For more information about our show, you can look us up on the Voice America Business Channel. You can visit our website at www.ieconsulting.biz. And don't forget, you can download the podcast version of this show as well. Just go to Apple iTunes, click podcast on the left side of the screen, enter Insight on Coaching in the search field, and you'll see us from there. Thanks, everyone. We'll see you next week.
Thank you for listening to Insight on Coaching. To contact Tom or his co-host about the show, visit www.ieconsulting.biz. Tune in next Monday for another educational hour of Insight on Coaching.